Welcome to Syntax. On this Monday Hasty Treat, we're going to be talking about LLMs, large language models, with a greater context window or greater amount of tokens that you can use and why that makes a difference and what you can possibly do with that given you're a software developer. And well, we kind of work with a lot of text, right? So you might think that these tokens are advantageous to have more of, and that's definitely the case. So we're going to be talking a little bit about AI solutions that can help you in your development just because you can give them more data and why that matters. My name is Scott Talinsky. I'm a developer from Denver, and with me today once again is CJ. What's up, CJ?
Not much. How you doing, Scott?
Oh, I'm doing good. Just context here. We just came back out of our holiday weekend. I was doing some grilling, some dad stuff. I was at the pool. I was grilling, made some ribs. I know you're not a meat guy, but man, CJ, I'm no West Boss myself. He's definitely a grill master. I'm a grill novice here, but I made some pretty dang good ribs, so I'm a little proud of myself.
Nice.
for doing that Memorial Day thing. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Yeah, we had a little get together on Saturday, and I grilled some plant-based burgers and plant-based brats, which was really good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the weather here has been awesome, and it's fun to just chill and grill for sure.
Chill and grill. I love it. We're going to be chilling and grilling today on Syntax. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about some really neat AI features that Sentry has. This podcast is brought to you by Sentry. And believe it or not, AI is really good at doing a few things. And one of those things is solving bugs. In fact, before this feature existed in Sentry, I have a giant, vomit of error log. And I'd say, I have no idea what any of this is. Let me just copy this, paste into ChatGPT and say, hey, can you make sense of this? Give this to me in English, please. And Sentry actually has a really neat experimental feature now, which allows you to look at an error and say, give me a potential possible solution for this. Given that you know a lot about software errors, let's go ahead and see if you could potentially solve that for me. And it's really pretty neat. It's an experimental feature, but it's one that I almost always try first before doing anything else, because chances are it gives you a proposed solution as well as a problem description, lets you kind of know what's going on, and then tells you if Sentry can try to fix it for you, potentially lead you in the right direction, which bugs are going to happen in your software. Sentry makes it easy to find and fix them. So let's get into LLMs, big tokens. First and foremost, token. What does a token mean to a novice, somebody who's coming in here? They've only used ChatGPT.
Yeah, so it is a unit of text. So, I mean, I like to think about it as like a word. Yeah. I guess it depends on the LLM that you're using. It could be like a single character or a whole word. But you might think of any block of text, count the words in it, that could be the token count. Or count the number of characters in it, that could be the token count. And so essentially the model, when it's processing it, it's going to break down your prompt and anything you provide in that text there into tokens so that it can process it. And you've probably seen any AI tool that you come across, like ChatGPT or Claude or Perplexity, or we're going to be talking about Gemini 1.5 Pro, they all have this token limit. So that's essentially the maximum number of tokens that you can provide in both your input and the output that comes from it.
Yeah. And there's some really neat little tools if you want to visualize this stuff online. And I'll post a link to one of them. But it depends on the model, like in terms of like what a token stands for. So if you just type in token into the GP4 token counter that I've posted here, it's 5 characters, but it's actually 12 tokens, which is interesting, right? Because it can just be a simple small unit. It isn't just that simple. So, it depends on how the model itself is understanding, perhaps subwords or individual characters and how those, maybe even full words, how that stuff all fits together. And it's really interesting. I don't necessarily think about it that much because I'm usually just typing and hitting enter. And if the language model says, hey, you've given me too much, it will say, hey, I cannot accept any more. Or when it's giving it its output, it'll just cut out the output mid-sentence. You're going to be left with being like, oh, great, thank you. Which is always great when you have like a big, long code example and you say, hey, can you do something with this code example? And it gives you, a quarter of the file or something. And say, okay, now give me this bit here. No, give me this bit here. So that having a larger context window or a larger amount of max tokens for any model, as you're going to be able to see in this episode, is definitely advantageous to us as software developers.
Definitely. And I think the other thing to think about is this context window whenever you're, let's say, most people have probably interacted with ChatGPT a little bit. So the way to think about this is, let's say you're having a conversation with ChatGPT and you give it a prompt, it gives you a response, you do another prompt, it gives you another response. The context window is basically the token limit. And so for GPT 3.5, I believe it's like roughly 4,000 tokens. We'll try to get a table of like exact token counts. But think of a token limit of 4,000 tokens. That means that the model can only look at 4,000 tokens at a time. And so as you ask it each new question, technically it can only go back in time 4,000 tokens. So it's kind of losing context for previous questions that you asked it or previous output that it gave. And so that's kind of what you have to worry about when you have a smaller token count and a smaller context window.
And understanding that can really prevent frustration when working with these things. I know me personally, if like I've given GPT for some context and then like I've told it, here's what I'm working on. This is the type of thing I expect from you. I want snake case, I want TypeScript, I want Svelte, I'm using a Node version 20, and then whatever, like 20 messages later, it starts spitting out require statements. I'd say, ESM, mother effer, like, give me that. Like, that. I actually do occasionally go off the handle a little bit when I'm talking to these things. I'm going to be first on the line when the robots come for us because of the language that I've used against some of these things. But, you know, I think that even understanding that, knowing that you have a window of context here is going to be good for how you use them in understanding, because context does a lot of things for an LLM. Like what I just said, if you tell it your code base is Node version 20, it's TypeScript, whatever, it has that context for when it's outputting your answer. Being able to store more things into that context gives the LLM finer grain understanding. Man, I keep using words like understanding and knowing that it doesn't know or understand anything. But it gives the LLM the ability to have that greater sense of context when it's giving the output. So you can get better results, more fine-tuned. Just overall, the larger token limit you have, the more context you can give the LLM, the better responses you can get.
Definitely. And it also ties into preventing hallucinations. So that's when the output is, it just completely made something up, or it's like not even related to what you're asking it. So like an example that Scott gave, if your very first prompt is, this is Node version 20 in ESM and let's say, so I just looked up the table here, and we have GPT 3.5 Turbo, they have roughly a context window of 16,000 tokens. And so let's say you've had some back and forth with this model, and now there's maybe like over 20,000 tokens even in this conversation. The next prompt no longer has that context of that very first message that said Node version 20 and ESM. So now it might output like require statements, and it might do something from like Node version 16. Like it's not going to have that context anymore. So it's going to like hallucinate things or do things that you didn't expect.
Yeah, you could think of it as like a virtualization window. You have a window. And as you scroll down, or in like video games, as you look left and right, the stuff outside of the window almost like does not exist. So the more token count you can have, the larger of a visibility window you have essentially for the data, if that tracks for how you visualize things.
Yeah. And we'll share this table in the show notes, but basically it has all of the models that you can use with specifically OpenAI. I know that's one of the most popular ones and that people use, but like, Specifically, GPT 3.5 Turbo can support 16,385 tokens, but GPT 4 Turbo can support 128,000 tokens, so that's much larger. And then the latest GPT 4.0, which is Omni, apparently it has the same context window, but it's potentially fine-tuned a little bit more. But with GPT-4, if you're paying for like the GPT Plus, your max context window is 128,000 tokens. I guess in contrast, we can look at Claude. And have you used Claude before? I've only used it a couple of times.
Yeah, I pay for Claude. So Claude and ChatGPT are the two that I pay for. So I use Claude 3 Opus, but I think I'm going to cancel because I don't know. It, you know, it's so funny with these things. You get that feeling, are these getting worse or am I just getting used to it? And that's kind of how I've been feeling with Claude lately, where I'm find myself arguing with it a lot more. So I typically do use the Claude 3 Opus is the one you can get via chat.
And yeah, and that one looks like on their pricing page, they're saying that it has 200,000 tokens. If you're using Claude 2.1, it also has 200,000. And then Claude 2.0 has a context window of about 100,000. So fairly big. And I think if you're at least using 2.1 or 3.0, it's almost twice the size of GPT-4. So it definitely gives you a much bigger window to make sure that you maintain that context in your prompts.
Yeah. I've always liked that you can paste in large files and it will read the entirety of them, or you can paste in a PDF or something. No problem.
Definitely.
So also, in addition to that, you might be wondering, like, okay, how does this relate to input length? And input length is really like how many things you can give it at once. Now, you might not know this, but if you work with the APIs, and this isn't true for every LLM, but if you work with the APIs, you typically get a larger input length. They tend to limit the input length of the UI. For instance, ChatGPT, for GPT-4, and I'm speaking about not the latest GPT-4, but as an example, GPT-4 has a context length of 8,129, or 92, right? But they capped in the UI, they capped the input length to 2048 because the total input output cannot exceed the context length. So what they don't want is people giving it 8,000 tokens of input and then only having 192 tokens for output, right? Because you gotta, there's just straight up basic algebra there.
So 8192 minus 2048, that's maths. And whatever that value is, I can't do in my head. That is the maximum output that the AI could give you for that specific prompt if it was 2048.
Yep. So let's talk about models and services with big token counts. Now, CJ just put me onto Gemini, which is funny because it's Google. Google's one of the biggest companies in the world. I had not even considered using Gemini. I don't know why, but Gemini 1.5, and it's not all Gemini 1.5 because there's different versions of Gemini 1.5, but the Gemini 1.5, I believe the Pro, is that the one? Let me double check.
Yeah, Gemini 1.5 Pro.
Yes, Gemini 1.5 Pro has a context window of 1,048,576 tokens. And that's a whole lot of tokens. That when you told me that, I think my hat went like it just shot off my head. I was like, oh, that's a lot more than I'm used to. And since then, I've been given Gemini 1.5 a spin. And I got to say, there's some coding tasks for this that I found to be really a joy to work in because they're simple tasks. I don't have to worry about doing too many things complexly with the large language model, where in fact, like, you can give it some mundane tasks with a lot of text and a lot of data, and it's stuff that LLMs do really well at. So I thought we would take some time, or CJ thought we would take some time to go through and talk about maybe some stuff that we've done or stuff that this is well suited for.
Definitely. And just to put this in context, like, a million tokens is 10 times more tokens than GPT 3.5 Turbo can handle, or five times more than like Claude 3.0. So like, we're dealing with inputs and outputs that are like much, much bigger than those models specifically. But one of the first things I tried with this was I wanted to generate some OpenAPI documentation or Swagger docs, if you've ever heard of those, given a database schema. So I had the SQL data definition language for a complex database, has like roughly 12 or so tables, and I wanted it to generate an API based on that data. And it did really well. And so one of the things that kind of like floored me initially is just how big the responses can be. Now, I think there are timeout issues. Like, sometimes it'll be responding and then it'll just stop, just like you might get with ChatGPT, where it's like it's giving you a response and then all of a sudden it just stops. And then you have to say continue or tell it to keep outputting. In my experience with Gemini 1.5 Pro, it was able to output for like almost 2 minutes straight of just like giving me all the stuff. And they may or may not change that, because that could technically be like an API rate limit thing where it like maybe at a certain point they just completely stop it from generating. But I do want to show you what was generated here. So I have, if you're watching the video pod, you can see I have the Swagger editor open. And on the left-hand side, we have some YAML that describes this API. Essentially, it needs to describe all of the schema. So all of the possible data and things that will be involved in inputs and outputs. And so given the SQL code that I gave it, it output a schema for category and city and comment. And specifically, this was around a restaurant API. So if you've watched the video that I did on the Syntax YouTube channel about Drizzle, I showed a complex database there, but I wanted to see could Gemini output some API documentation automatically based on that database schema. And so it's pretty slick. If you're watching the video pod, basically within Swagger Docs, we can see for every type of thing, it has a specific schema. This is like in line with the schemas that are actually in the database. And then we can see all of the different route groupings. So we see endpoints for restaurants, for menu items, for offers. And then what's cool about this is each one of these also has like validation for input. So if we take a look at the post request for restaurants, restaurant ID, and then menu items, this has a specific schema that describes what a menu item would have. And then whenever we're making a post request to this endpoint, the Swagger UI is going to basically give us that schema, give us some examples, and we can kind of like play around with the API as well. So the API doc definition itself is roughly 1,400 lines of code. And Gemini 1.5 Pro was able to output those 1,400 lines in a single response. I did kind of do some back and forth because initially it gave me like a very flat schema that was just like one route grouping for every table. But then I was like, well, maybe we should group these together as like menu items by restaurant. And so after it output the full one, it then, after I asked it to reconfigure it, it outputted another full one, but with more context of like, oh, okay, so let's actually like group these endpoints together. I tried a similar thing in just ChatGPT-4, and it could never get past just like generating schemas and then like one endpoint. It would just stop. It wouldn't generate anymore. And so yeah, this was pretty cool for me because I'm just imagining the working in much larger code bases, right? So like this is giving me, if I were building this app for a customer or something like that, this is a huge jumping off point, right? Like the doing the mundane work of like thinking of what are all the route endpoints and what are the schemas, it's done that. And then now I can go in and do the more complex work of like implementing these endpoints or even further asking the AI to implement some of these endpoints for me as well.
Wow, yeah. I think these are the types of things that this is really well suited for. I could imagine giving it a whole code base and like having that in the context. Here is an entire library. The library is now in your context. Let me ask you a bunch of questions about this library. One thing I did recently was I've been working a lot in JS doc style typing because I've been doing, I have a big mono repo I'm working on, like a SvelteKit starter. And the SvelteKit starter has like a really interesting little package system where I have local packages that you can pick and throw into your project really easily as part of the starter process of it, right? If I'm giving a blog, it's going to pick several packages and throw them into a local mono repo. But I didn't want those to be TypeScript. I didn't want there to have to be a build process there. So I've been getting into JS doc style typing. The only thing is I'm not great at JS doc style typing. I've never really done it a whole lot. So I've been working with big files. The repo, by the way, CJ, is called Drop-In.
Drop-In, okay.
Yeah. Drop-In is a skateboarding themed starter for SvelteKit, and it's pretty neat. But again, what I was able to do is take a local package and I was able to run the whole file, and given that it has a lot of context, and say, hey, just JS doc type this for me. And because I'm working in single individual big files, I didn't have to do it in a step-by-step breakdown. Output the types for me. The types were perfect, correct, looked great. And not only did I get JS doc types out of it, I understood a little bit about that syntax and what's going on there. So it was a nice little learning experiment.
Definitely. And I mean, for me, that's huge. And because you mentioned this earlier, like maybe you paste a library for the in the context, or what I was thinking is you could even paste documentation for like newer libraries. I think one of the issues that like ChatGPT has or any of these other AIs have is that they've been trained on older data. So if you, for instance, if you ask it for help generating a Drizzle schema, it's going to hallucinate most of the time because it actually doesn't have the docs or the latest info about it. But if you can simply just paste in the documentation or the API examples as part of your prompt, because now you have like a huge context window. Now you can ask it to do things that it wasn't necessarily even trained on, and you don't have to like generate the embeddings for. You can literally just include all of the things you want it to know about in your prompt itself, which is slick.
Yeah, it's super slick. And that to me is great, because that's where these things should be, you know, should be existing for us right now in this space. I think too oftentimes people look at this stuff as it's going to take your job because it's going to do everything for you. And it, you know, I know this conversation's been had to death, but
yeah,
the way I see this working really well is that you know what you want. You have all the context in the world. You can get help getting what you want faster. You can read through it. You can modify it. You can adjust it. You know what you're getting. But if you don't know the output that you're expecting, if it just outputs some code, you're like, yeah, copy and paste, throw it in there, then it's typically not going to go super well for you. So being able to know exactly like what you want out of these things, what the output should look like and should be in the types of code you want, being able to give it all the context in the world will only aid you in being able to better get that out.
Definitely. And I think that's probably for me, that's why I am getting benefit out of AI now, is like for these little like simple like one-off like solve this leak code or just like build a to-do app, like it's not useful for me, but I know what I want to do. I just want it to give me a kickstart, right? So like do a lot more that would for me just be like very mundane work that it could figure out very quickly.
Give me this regex, please.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the big one.
And so the next example I have that I used was generating seed data for a complex database. So, so if you saw over on the Syntax channel, I did a video about Drizzle and basically implementing a complex database schema. And I'll be honest, I wrote the schema myself. I didn't use AI for it. So I actually like typed out all the code. But what I did use AI for was generating the seed data. So if you take a look at this repo, it's github.com/w3cj/bytedash. And then if you go into the seeds directory under DB, there's a data folder, and then I have a bunch of JSON files. Each one of these JSON files was generated using the Gemini 1.5 Pro. So I basically, I pasted in my SQL schema. I then told it that I was looking to seed data here, and I told it to output as JSON so that I could then write my own code to import these JSON files. But for instance, if we look at like the simplest one is categories.json. It's very simple. It's just an array with six categories. We have appetizers, lunch, dinner, salads, sides, and desserts. Easy enough. But it output that. I didn't have to think too hard about what are the different kinds of categories of food. But what was really cool is I told it to generate restaurants as well. And so, and then from there, generate restaurant items. So if you look at this restaurants.json file, this is over 1600 lines of code in here. And basically for each restaurant, it has a street address, a zip code, a city name. And I told it to come up with fake restaurant names. I didn't want to use anything in the real world. So that's one thing that AI is good at, is kind of just coming up with interesting things that you don't have to ideate yourself. And then from there, it created menu items for each one of these restaurants that were like themed to that restaurant. And so if we were to do this ourselves, there are tools like Faker, and there are other tools that can like generate this kind of data. But what's nice about this is it's like, it looks like real data, right? These look like legitimate menu items and prices and ingredient lists and stuff like that. And it was able to generate all of that for all of my restaurants all in a single go. I think actually for this one, I did kind of do it like one restaurant at a time, because trying to generate all of that at once, it potentially could have caused some issues. I definitely had some back and forth, but I first had it generate a list of restaurants. And then I was like, all right, for this restaurant, generate 20 menu items that fall into these categories. And so you can take a look at this repo of all these JSON files. Each one of these was just generated using AI. And I think just having this much data generated automatically to be able to like test out your app without needing to like run everything through Postman initially was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great use case, because even advanced usage of Faker, you're still having to code a lot to get good fake data out of it. You're having to have an understanding of Faker, but also like the specific methods you need to get the specific types of data. And this too, you could give it information to say, I want a variety of lengths of descriptions, right? Because sometimes when you're working with fake data, it gives you kind of uniformly linked things, or maybe perhaps you, like you said, you want text that is not lorem ipsum, but it is filler text, but it can be about a fictional restaurant. AI is great at making that kind of stuff up. And then that way, when you're coding out your design, you're never going to be in a situation where, you know, real data comes in and all of a sudden the design can't handle it because you've been able to throw in really good fake data. Another thing you mentioned is being able to summarize a massive amount of video. This one to me was like, this was the killer use case for me when you told me about this.
Definitely. Because, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. Like, we have summaries that get generated by AI. But I guess I don't know the exact details of it, but I know when Wes was talking about it a while back, he basically had to create summaries of summaries because the context window is only so big. But for this, I literally pasted in an 8-hour transcript of React Conf day one, and it spit out a summary with chapter markers and summaries of like each talk that were output. And this was crazy for me. So I have a YouTube channel called Coding Garden where I do live streams. And one of the things I've wanted to do for the longest time is to take a 4-hour or 5-hour stream and then easily summarize it, easily come up with like timestamps that I can post on YouTube. And I've never been able to find an easy way to do that with AI. And this can do it with GPT 1.5. So let me pull up the example really quick. Jeez. If you're watching the video pod, you can see the example here where I literally, so the prompt I give it is, given the following auto-generated transcript of day one of React Conf 2024, and then I paste it in the transcript. And you can see in the token count, this is 348,970 tokens. Wow. For my overall like prompt siege here. So this is huge. And initially, I just tried this. I just said, generate a summary with timestamps given this transcript. And it hallucinated a bunch. Like, so that all I gave it was the transcript, and it would output like random timestamps. It would come up with people's names. Like, it came up with like 3 different names for Dan Abramov. Because I think one of the issues here is you're dealing with auto captions from YouTube. So it doesn't necessarily have the right spellings or whatever else. So to really make it work, I provided even more context. So basically, we have the full transcript. And then right after that, I also plugged in, let's see. Yeah, so this is what I said. I said, the transcript might have names or technical topics wrong since it's auto-generated. The agenda, talks, and correct speaker names for the day were. And then I gave it
perfect
things.
Yes.
Yeah, so I basically pulled this from the React Conf site and I said, these are the speakers. These are the talks that they gave. And so now it has a little more context for how to fit this like unstructured transcript data into a more like structured summary.
And that's why context matters, because that context is really what enabled this to actually be usable, because without that it wasn't. In fact, one of the things we do with the syntax one is that Wes and I both had specific sayings that were unique to us that we use FFmpeg to attach onto an episode. And so the AI knows that Scott says something about cheese on the moon or something, and then Wes says something about purple something else that don't sound like each other. So that way the context is there that this is Scott, this is Wes. The one that we always have the hardest time with, even with context, is getting century to be spelled not like century, like this is a 10 years, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's basically, We've taken an output that had a lot of hallucinations and that was like, okay, I'll try my best. And we've kind of like started to align it. And with bigger context windows, this is something you can start to do, definitely. And another piece of context I gave it were the timestamps of the start of each talk. I also tried it without giving it this, and it actually did a pretty good job of figuring out when a talk started. But by giving it this context, we're basically saying the intro starts at 16 minutes 13. The talk on what's new in React starts at 2 hours and 28 minutes. That gave it even more of a box to fit into. So that way, in the actual output, each of the sections, it knows to start at that specific timestamp and then kind of like summarizes each thing that happened within that section. And so if you're watching the video pod, I'm not going to like read the transcript, but I will link to the generated summary that it gave me. But it's pretty insane because it has the starting timestamp of each talk. It then has bullet points of everything that happened in that talk, and then a timestamp that links to that specific section in the talk. And so if you're someone that's trying to very easily review like 8 hours of a video, this is huge because now you have some starting points, right? You have some bullet points you can go by. You can dive into some of these timestamps. And yeah, just makes looking at a large amount of information to kind of like distill it, but in a way that isn't hallucinating, as far as I could tell so far by verifying it, and is generating like good data.
Yeah, I think that it all comes back to you got to know what you're expecting to see. Because if you wouldn't have like validated any of this stuff and it just outputted from the initial get-go, you might have been like, hey, it looks like a summary of a conference, right? But without going into it and really knowing what you're expecting to see out of it, you might have, you know, missed that entirely. So again, all about context, context, context. That's the key word here. Cool. So some stuff that we haven't necessarily tried ourselves, again, giving it more context of a code base. I would really love to give this a try of giving it an entire library and then asking for code using that library, or even more of my code base. Here's more bits of my code base as the context. Here's some examples of code that I would write. Another one is like a personal AI, right? An AI that works for you, or an AI that could be you in general. And in fact, AIs have a general idea of who I am, which is very bizarre to me. But I asked for it to comment my code in the style of Scott Tolinsky one time, and it said, "Yo, yo, yo, this is a variable here." And I'm just like, "Oh, come on, that's what you think of me?" Like, it was like, "Yo, yeah. Dog, here's the constant." And I'm like, "Oh, come on, why would you think I would say that?" Even though there's a chance I would, but yeah. you got to do me like that.
I've done similar things. I was like, earlier on, I was asking it to generate like YouTube transcripts in the style of CJ. It thinks I'm a pretty nice guy, but it thinks I'm just like way too nice and bubbly. I don't know. But some of the ideas I had for like personal AI are basically asking it about things about your own life, right? So like, what if you could preface a prompt with your entire calendar and all of your agenda, like your meetings that are coming up or your previous meetings? What if you could preface a prompt with like every note you've taken on a specific topic? And so now it has context to answer in relation to your own notes and your own information about your own life.
Yeah. I keep a lot of detailed notes in Obsidian, and that's all just straight markdown. It'd be really interesting to pass it in some of my Obsidian notes.
Definitely. And I think especially like if you're doing research on a topic and like you've taken your own notes and like pulled in from various resources, then you can start to distill down and ask it questions based even on like the notes that you've taken.
Word.
So with all of this, we haven't talked about cost. And so right now, as of the recording of this podcast, Gemini 1.5 Pro is technically free to use in the dev console. So if you go to aistudio.google.com, you can use Gemini 1.5 Flash and Gemini 1.5 Pro. We haven't talked about the differences, but I think Flash, eventually when they start charging, will incur less cost. It's a little bit faster. But in the dev console, you can just have a conversation with it. It's not going to charge you anything. But when they do start charging, it does look like it's going to be somewhat expensive. So we'll have to be careful with how many 400,000 token prompts that we give it. And it also, I think it depends on how often you're querying it as well. But if we look at the pricing page, it is saying that for GPT 1.5 Pro, if you're using it via the API, it will be $1.05 per million tokens. And that's for prompts up to 128,000 tokens. This summarizing a 8-hour transcript probably would have costed me $2 if I would have used the API. Like, I guess we don't know for sure, because a lot of these models, they keep free when you're at least using the API console, because I think you're kind of like trying it out, making sure that it'll work before you actually make API calls with it. But yeah, that is something to note, that this probably would have cost like $2 or so if they were charging for the API.
Get your free queries in while you can, folks.
Yeah.
that's the message. Yeah.
Yeah, but I am excited to see if and when ChatGPT comes out with bigger context windows and also Claude. So that way we can do some of these things with our already like subscription that we're paying for, and not necessarily have to pay like $1 per million tokens or whatever else.
Word. Cool. Well, this has been really super neat, and thank you for turning me on to Gemini here in the developer console. And man, I have found it to be very useful. So hopefully you found this useful as well. So as always, we will catch you on Wednesday. Peace.
Peace.